Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th. Hosted by Kevin Hart. The seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady. Live only on Netflix.
You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
What are you doing later?
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy?
Fall Guy.
That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
Hello everyone, welcome to this week's edition of the Spanish Football Podcast. I'm Phil Kitramalides and Dr. Sidlow is with me as ever. Hello Sydney.
Hello Philip, how are you?
I'm alright mate, you're joining us from San Sebastian where you were last night for Real Sociedad against Real Betis, the big Sunday night game. In the absolute pouring rain, did you enjoy it?
Yeah, I did actually. It wasn't a great...
Just generally the experience.
It wasn't a great game.
Right,
but
yeah.
That's why I was
focusing more on the experience. I got away with
not too much rain, considering how bad it was.
Yes. Well, that's good. That's all we can ask for. We're going to discuss Match Day 12 and everything that happened this weekend, all the main talking points. Before we do that, just want to alert you to the fact that if you haven't already, why not join us over at patreon.com/TSFP. This week, we'll have a Q&A podcast out for patrons on Tuesday, answering all your questions. We're going to have a bonus pod on Thursday or Friday, discussing the midweek European games. We're paying special attention now to the Europa League. And we'll have a brand new episode of TSFP Presents Top Fives, plus Al's paper reviews, access to the TSFP Discord, loads of stuff. It's around €4 a month and good value if you're into Spanish football, which we very much hope you are. Here's what happened on Match Day 12 then. Friday night saw Mallorca and Espanyol draw 1-1. Saturday saw Almeria beat Celta Vigo by 3-1. Third successive home win for Almeria. Third successive game scoring 3 goals in their own stadium as well. Cadiz 3, Atletico 2 was an absolutely crazy game which finished in the craziest of fashions for Atletico. Sevilla still haven't won at home. It's November. They haven't won at home. Well, it's November tomorrow. They haven't won at home. They were beaten 1-0 at home by the mighty Rayo Vallecano, who continue to just be fantastic and brilliant and play wonderfully. And I love those guys. Barca won at Mestalla by 0-1, beating Valencia. Robert Lewandowski scoring in the 93rd minute, saving their bacon once again. Then on Sunday, Osasuna beat Valladolid 2-0. Real Madrid and Girona drew 1-1 at the Bernabeu in controversial circumstances. Wasn't actually that controversial, but more on that in a minute. Athletic Club beat Villarreal 1-0 in Quique Setién's first game in charge of Villarreal. In truth, it could and should probably have been 4 or 5-0, with Athletic spurned so many good chances. And then the game that Sydney was at in San Sebastian, La Real conceding twice late on to get beaten by hashtag always watch Betis 2-0. Monday night football, it is a triple extra premium diamond level platinum
you'll get
Spanish football
end.
Lover game. Yeah. This is for the real hardcore. Elche against Getafe Monday night. If you're watching that, our work is done. We have converted you and we respect you highly.
You will be watching that, won't you, Phil? If only just as an excuse to avoid Halloween.
Oh, yeah. God, I hate Halloween so much. And I mean, it was all right when I didn't have a kid, you know. You could just sort of be like a bit of a Grinch and everyone else sort of get into it. And I'm like, I'm not going to get involved. Now I've got a kid, I actively have to sort of get involved in this nonsense and I'm desperately, desperately unhappy about it. But anyway, let's talk about Spanish football instead. That makes me happy. Real Madrid against Girona. I said it was controversial because Girona had a penalty awarded and Real Madrid had a goal disallowed. We think both those decisions were right. Sorry, Real Madrid fans. I know lots of people's view on this are conditioned by who they support. It's the nature of the game. We understand that. We've been here long enough. We don't support either Real Madrid or Barcelona. We did.
Or Girona.
Or Girona. In this case. But, you know. Barcelona is always involved when you mention Real Madrid, because you can't mention one without the other sort of being there or thereabouts. We do kind of agree with both of the decisions, right, Sid?
I think actually fundamentally, the way I would frame it is that I agree with Mitchell, the manager of Girona, who I think said it very well. He said, and I liked his honesty, I liked his directness, he said that the goal that was ruled out for Real Madrid, as far as he's concerned, is a goal. He said, but it's not down to me. I don't make the rules. Well, he didn't actually say that, but he said, you know, for me, in footballing terms, this should be a goal. But the rules say it's a foul. The reason is essentially because the ball is loose, the goalkeeper puts his hand on it, and he's starting to kind of pull it in towards himself, and Rodrigo comes in and nudges the ball over the line. I would agree with Mitchell. For me, this isn't a foul. For me, there's nothing wrong with it whatsoever. But if you look at the rules talk about a hand on the top of the ball with a downward pressure. Although I must admit, I think there was a downward pressure and he's starting to roll it towards him. That's why it's ruled out. And I like that approach from Mitchell. And I think that approach could be more or less applied to the Asensio handball. Mm-hmm. I don't think those kind of things should be handballs for the most part. But I think the way the rules are structured and the talk about the hand being above the shoulder, it absolutely is a handball if, and by the way, I must confess, this is still an if for me, if the ball actually hits his arm. There's a couple of angles where I think it doesn't, and there's one where I think it does, and I honestly don't know the answer.
Yeah, but the referees, or the VAR, seem to have slowed it down frame by frame and be convinced that it did hit his hand.
And look, this is a broader debate which we're not going to get into now because we could be here all day, but as I repeatedly say, my problem with the VAR isn't so much the justice or otherwise of the decisions, it's what it does to the game itself rather than what it does to the decisions.
In terms of the game itself, it was a little bit espeso from Real Madrid. How do we describe that word? How do we translate
sort of
that
heavy
word?
Going, stodgy. I suppose. Yeah, stodgy is a good word. Stodgy is a very good word. I like that. And I think, in a way, this is, you know, this fits within the context, which is a team packed full of potential World Cup players. Mm-hmm. A couple of weeks from the World Cup, I think any player who has the slightest doubt whatsoever about his fitness isn't going to take a risk, and I suspect that that probably applies for Benzema. I think Benzema's current fitness, yes, is a slight concern, but I think if there wasn't a World Cup around the corner, maybe he'd be playing anyway. I think there's a mental thing, even if it's not a conscious level of the World Cup kind of being around the corner. And I also think, you know, this is just a sort of a slight kind of tail off anyway, just in the level of performance. And Ancelotti, I thought, kind of pre-warned us about this a few weeks ago, didn't he? He talked about, there was that line, he said that line about, well, if you don't want to be committed, you can sit on the sofa at home. And he also used that line where he said that at times we look at ourselves in the mirror. You know, we're satisfied that we've won and we're happy to just kind of sit here and look in the mirror. And I don't think that's a conscious decision to down tools. I just think it's a kind of a natural consequence of the context in which I think a lot of players find themselves. And by the way, I think you can look at this across the league this weekend. I think you can see it with Lewandowski, with Cavani going off early. I think you can see it with Lo Celso going off early. I think you can see it with Koundé going off early. These are all players who have knocks, and there's no question about that. I'm not saying there's any invention whatsoever, but I think these are knocks that possibly in other circumstances you would perhaps push your way through. And I think that's a kind of, like a kind of psychological or emotional process that I think has been played out for a lot of players.
Yeah, so many players went off with knocks this weekend. So many across all the matches in La Liga. It's almost like squeezing in all the games just before the World Cup. 10 matches in 30 days might have some kind of after effect on players.
Yes, and maybe not so much an after effect as a pre-effect, if you see what I mean. It's the games themselves that are getting impacted upon rather than the players. And in a way, the after effect on the players is possibly more a fear than a reality, if you see what I mean. So I think what's happening is about that.
Vinicius Junior scoring the goal for Real Madrid, brilliantly set up by Fede Valverde, who once again is very, very involved in what Real Madrid do in the final third. There was no Benzema on this occasion. Rodrigo started. It wasn't the best game from anyone, really, from Real Madrid. But once again, Fede Valverde being involved and Vinicius Junior popping up. Girona, though, they scored one. They could easily have scored more. They're a good side to watch.
Yeah, they want to bring the ball out from the back. They were a little bit more defensive than I think they would normally be. But obviously, you know, it's the Bernabeu. They were very conscious, and Mitchell talked about this post game and not allowing Real Madrid to run transitions on them, trying to keep the ball away from them, but also in those moments when you don't have the ball, don't give them the space to run into. I must admit, I thought there was a degree of trying to take the pace out of the game by stopping. And, you know, recovery from knocks taking a little bit longer and going to ground a bit quicker than would normally be the case.
Obviously.
But exactly. And, yeah. And I think every team does that at the Bernabeu and yeah. indeed probably at the Camp Nou.
Yeah.
But I think you're right. I think they are a good team to watch. There was that moment in the first half where they really nearly give the ball away trying to play their way out, and the goalkeeper has to make a kind of a real lunge to get there ahead of, is it Rodrigo running in on him? I think it is. Or maybe it's Asensio, I can't remember now. And there's a risk then, but they want possession, they want the ball. This is the way that Mitchell was at Rio as well. He's a really kind of likable manager, likable in terms of the way that he conducts himself, but also likable in the way that he wants his teams to play.
Absolutely. Credit to Girona. They still haven't won in the last 7 games, but they've scored in each of their last 9. Haven't kept a clean sheet all season, though. We'll see whether or not they stay up. But in terms of footballing ability, there are 3 worse teams than them, I would say, in the Primera División. Let's move on. There's loads we want to pack into today's show. Talk about Barca and their 1-0 win at Valencia. Again, not fantastic from Barcelona, although they did do enough to win this game. And I think Valencia were actually quite disappointing. But once again, Lewandowski, the difference between these 2 sides, as he was when they went to Mallorca a few weeks ago, he scored the only goal of the game then. He scored the only goal of the game on Saturday at Mestalla. A full Mestalla, by the way, which is great to see.
Yeah.
We were talking about what were the best stadiums in Spain on TSFP Presents Top 5s last week, and Mestalla was right up there near the top. Great to see it resplendently full and very, very noisy, but the team didn't really perform. And this also wasn't a brilliant game.
No, I don't think it was a brilliant game at all. And in the second half, I think it was possibly even worse than it had been in the first. I think that this is a Barcelona team that doesn't... I don't know quite know how to kind of explain this. I feel like it's a Barcelona team that in theory knows what it wants to be, but in practice doesn't seem to, if you see what I mean. I don't think there's a clarity about their approach, even though in theory you've got a manager with the most clear idea almost in world football. You know, he's a kind of a Puritan, if you like, about his approach. I think it's a team that doesn't control the game as much as you might expect a Barcelona team to do, although I would say they've had more than 50% of the possession in every single game this season, possibly even including the 2 Bayern Munich games in the Champions League. They would be the 2 that I would have the doubt about. They certainly did at home.
They averaged 63% possession this season.
Yeah.
So
you know, there's a degree of identity there. I'm not saying that tells you anything about how good they are, but there's a degree of identity there. But they're not a particularly great team. And I saw some stats today, and I must admit, I quite often think this when I see stats that are done in sort of visual form. And it was this sort of dot scatter graph.
Yes.
And it was showing how many touches Lewandowski has. And obviously, I look at it, and it's just a blur to me. It looks like one of those colourblind tests, just without the colours. But you get this, which is how I see colourblind tests
anyway.
Because
you are actually colourblind.
But you kind of get this feeling he doesn't actually get a huge amount of service. You know, he gets enough, but not a huge amount. And it's really quite striking how many goals he's got. It's 13 in La Liga. I think I'm right in saying it's 18 overall. For a player that's not getting loads of chances. When he gets them, he takes them very well. And this one was reminiscent of, I can't remember which game it is, that he scores one very similar to this. It looks a little bit like a Haaland one. It's almost like he's tackling the ball into the net, isn't he? Sort of diving to wrap his foot around a cross that would otherwise escape him.
Someone who did have chances in this game was Ansu Fati. He had a goal disallowed for a marginal offside decision. It feels like he's getting towards where we want him to be, and I don't say we as in Barca fans, we as lovers of Spanish football, we want to see him do well. It's his 20th birthday today, by the way, so happy birthday to Ansu.
It's extraordinary, isn't it? He's only 20. It feels like he's been around for really quite a long time. He's had a couple of really big injuries as well. Imagine what kind of point he might be at without that. We still, of course, do, I think, all harbour some doubts about the rehabilitation from those injuries, about whether he'll have the same speed and the same sort of... The thing with Ansu is I don't always see it as pure speed. There's a sort of an agility about him, isn't there? There's a glide about him that makes him so nice to watch.
Do you think he's not back then yet to where he was pre-injury?
No, no, I don't think he's there. But then bear in mind that then it felt like absolutely everything he touched went in. And it felt like there was a sort of an acceleration about him, and as I say, a kind of an agility, a glide about him that I don't quite see now, but I think we're getting closer. And I, you know, when you say we and you talk about Spanish football fans, obviously part of this again is conditioned by the World Cup, and I still feel like he's a player who should go, because even if he's not fully fit, he has something, and you know, he has goal. He has a relationship with the goal that I think not too many Spanish strikers have, not even those who do actually score quite a few.
Ferran Torres did have a really good relationship with the goal for the Spanish national team, at least. He had a really good chance to win this late on, which he somehow contrived to miss. Got absolutely hammered by the home fans at Mestalla.
Yeah, I thought that was... I mean, I thought it was over the top. And obviously, look, the fundamental thing, I think it's over the top when there's that degree of kind of abuse for a player anyway, in any circumstance. But even within a context of sort of accepting that players get pelters and that they get abused, which I'm not sure that we should accept, but we sort of do, and I don't know if it's the right thing to do. Even within that context, I thought it was a bit much, in that this is a player that, yes, he up to a point sort of pushed for a departure, but he pushed for a departure based on the politics of the club, who wanted to sell him. He went leaving a huge amount of money for the club. He didn't go to a direct rival. Obviously, now you might argue that he's ended up at one by going to Barcelona, but he went to Manchester City. He basically went in a way because he kind of had to. Now, that's not entirely true, because I think, unlike some of the others like Carlos Soler, I think there was a degree of him wanting to go.
I don't think he left a huge amount of money.
25, wasn't it, I think?
Yeah, is that huge?
Well, given that he was only 19, I think it's quite a lot.
Okay.
Was he 19? I think he was 19. But yes, it's not enormous, but it's a significant amount of money for a club that you know, is selling a teenager. I think there's a real disappointment, though, at how young he went, and that probably conditions part of this as well. He also then, it's true, did an interview with Marca not long after he went, in which he handed out a few kickings. He went for a few people, including some people, for example, Dani Parejo, who it didn't seem entirely justified to hand out a kicking to.
He did, and I think that interview might have had a lot to do with the reception.
I think it might well have done, yes.
With the reception on Saturday night. Let's move on into, if there's anything we haven't talked about, and there's lots of things that we haven't talked about, and if you want us to talk about them, send us questions. We'll answer them on the Q&A pod for patrons. Let's move on and talk about Atletico. What a bloody week for Atletico Madrid. Miss a 99th minute penalty to crash out of the Champions League on Wednesday evening, then concede a 99th minute goal to lose at Cadiz. Yeah. After getting yourself back to 2-2, having been 2-0 down in the game. It's just an extraordinary sequence of football. Not really sure where to start with our analysis of this game, Sydney, but I know you've been writing about Atletico.
Yeah, well, so I suppose we start at the end, as we do with a Champions League game in midweek, and the fact that it's the very last kick that does it for them. Obviously, in one case, it's them missing a penalty and the rebound. This time, it's them conceding a goal because the game doesn't restart afterwards. There's a brief moment when there's a VAR check to see if he might have handballed it, Sobrino, and sort of Simeone very, very meekly kind of appeals for a handball, but you can see that his heart's just not in it, and he knows he's not there, and it's just a sort of a broken man saying, well, please don't do this. And then I suppose you step away from that and you look at the process of the game, which is that they concede after 26 seconds. Lovely stat from Mr. Chip, who says it's the longest gap between two goals conceded by the same team ever in a game. So 26 seconds and then 98 minutes and 6 seconds.
Wow.
I don't know if that would be true if you include games of extra time. I think it was a La Liga game. It's a stat for La Liga.
Yeah, all right.
But they didn't play well. And then actually for about 20 minutes they did. And one of the things that I think was interesting about this is that for 20 minutes they played really well with João Félix everywhere. He does everything in those last 20 minutes. You know, he scores twice. He creates...
Almost like he's got a point to prove.
Yeah. And I was thinking to myself, had Atletico won it, and in particular, had they won it with a João Félix hat-trick, which they could have been because he has a headed chance after he scored the two.
Yes.
And I sort of thought to myself, I wonder how Simeone will feel about that. Now, that's a terribly cynical way of me looking at it. But this is the guy that you haven't played for 8 weeks, or haven't started, rather, for 8 weeks, who I think coming into this weekend's games had played something like 56 minutes in the whole of October. And you watch him rescue you, and do you actually think, brilliant. Do you, which obviously you do in the immediacy of it because you just need to win. Do you sort of feel a bit put out by it? Do you feel a bit kind of like, I'm not having this? I must admit, I did wonder.
There's a bit of a power struggle going on at Atletico Madrid between Cholo Simeone and João Félix and the club, because obviously the club would quite like their most valuable asset and potentially most talented player to be playing.
Yes.
João Félix himself is demonstrably unhappy at the amount of time he's being played, but Cholo is saying, no, I'm the manager, I'm still very much in charge of everything here, and I haven't seen enough from him to merit a place in the in the starting 11.
I think João Félix is hugely symbolic of a shift that's happening now. Now, there's a shift in a way that, because we seem to be talking about this every season, you know, the evolution of a style, and then you come back again, and then you go back to what you know, and then Simeone looks a bit weak, but then his position gets strengthened again. And, you know, then the last time we were really, really talking about Simeone as maybe at the end of a cycle, the following season they went and won the league. But that
season they signed Luis Suarez, they got Kieran Trippier, they had Marcos Llorente playing alongside Kieran Trippier, and they shifted things, and they don't have the people to do that now.
No, they don't. And of course, this is one of the questions that sort of is beneath the surface, or maybe not even beneath the surface, maybe on the surface here, is this whole question about, is the team that has been built in terms of the players in it the team that Simeone would have built? And is this, you know, so the identity, is this really Simeone's team anymore? And I think João Félix is the classic symbol of that. And I think you're right. I think there's a power struggle. I don't even know if it's, I wouldn't even necessarily say it's between Simeone and João Félix.
No.
It's between Simeone and the symbol of João Félix and what the club says. And it is not coincidence that there have been few reports over the course of the last 3 or 4 days of people within the club saying, oh, it feels like the end of a cycle, people within the club saying this team should be better, people within the club criticising Diego Simeone. And this is the thing. I think the most significant thing about those reports isn't the content of them. It's the existence of them. Because Atletico Madrid, maybe not to the level of clubs like Madrid and Barcelona, but Atletico Madrid are a club that have a really quite significant degree of control about the way the messaging is handled and about the way certain things are filtered out. And the existence of those reports means something. And by the way, Simeone knows that. And you can see that in some of the things he said over the last 3 or 4 weeks.
Doesn't this feel like it's it? I mean, not right now, but at the end of the season, I mean...
I must admit, I was starting to think that yesterday, and I was starting to think, is this basically, you know, them? Everyone will now kind of back Simeone, they will very publicly support him, but there will be a kind of sense that we see this through, and then maybe we look for a solution in the summer,
All right. Let's talk about Real Sociedad against Betis, which was the big game on Sunday evening, which you were there pitch side to witness. Now, being pitch side, you don't necessarily get the best view of the game, but what you do get is a front row seat to watching the players battle, and you witnessed a real battle between Borja Iglesias and first Robin Lenormand and then Aritz Elustondo, who basically came on and carried on kicking him,
which is exactly what
Lenormand had been doing. Robin Lenormand had been kicking him. He got a yellow card, so they substituted him off, and on came Elustondo to basically continue the job. It was a fascinating little mini battle within a game, which wasn't an immensely entertaining game, but that was a particularly interesting little subplot. Borja Iglesias scoring the second goal on a breakaway for Betis after another really good assist from Alex Moreno, who had assisted Juan Cruz for the first goal. And El Panda's got 8 league goals now for Betis. He's the first Real Betis player in the 21st century to reach the total of 8 goals after match day 12. He's flying. We like him. We like him as a player. We like him as a person. And it's good to see him triumphing like this.
Yeah, and this game was another indication of how those goals are... what do you call this in English? Trabajados. Those goals are goals...
Well worked.
That every goal he scores is the product of an enormous amount of work. You know, it's not necessarily the product of pure talent. It's not the product of the ball dropping. It's a product of an endless and relentless fight for the chance to get one opportunity, but to do a lot more than that as well. And watching him last night, as you say, I mean, it was Lenormand and then Elustondo, but also actually a little bit of the time with Pacheco as well. Mm-hmm. And he's a player, Borja, who gets a huge amount of kind of buffeting during the game, a huge amount of he fights, they fight back, they fight each other, he sort of gets up, has a smile, carries on, and then goes fighting again. He's also though a player who I think gets penalised a lot just for being big. He doesn't actually do a lot wrong a lot of the time, but he gets a lot of fouls given against him for just holding his ground against defenders. You sort of watch him and you think, God, this must be exhausting to play and to be sort of constantly buffeted about. And he enjoys it. That's sort of one of the things that makes it so good. He sort of enjoys it. And then, you know, the reward comes in the 93rd minute. As you say, it's another amazing run for Alex Moreno, who just physically is in great shape.
Spain have produced so many good left-backs.
Yeah, they really
There's
have.
So many good left-backs in this country.
And I would take him to the World Cup,
Yes, he really is.
He produces both of them on both goals on very good long runs, both very late in the game. But remember, the key thing, the sort of point I was going to make about Borja is the second of those, there are three Betis players that keep up with Alex Moreno, and Borja is one of them.
Yeah. It was like a 100-meter sprint.
It was a spat stampede, wasn't it? Yeah, absolutely. Yeah.
So Betis beating La Real, moving up to fourth in the table. They're level on points with Atletico Madrid, who beat them last weekend, but then they lost this weekend and Betis won. So they're level on points. They're in the top four and they're doing extremely well. Quick word from me. You don't even have to say anything if you don't want to. I don't know if you watched this game, Sevilla 0, Rayo 1.
No, I didn't, unfortunately.
Sevilla were bloody awful, Sid. Yeah. Again. The Sampaoli effect has lasted. It lasted 20 minutes. It was the first game. Those 20 minutes of the first game against Athletic Club, okay, you could see a slight, you could see a difference, you could see a bit more energy, you could see them being more direct, more vertical. And since then, we've not seen that.
No.
We haven't. They were bloody awful again. They didn't have a shot on target in the first half. At all. They didn't have a shot in the first half. Forget on target. They didn't have a shot in the first half at home against Rayo, which was... And you know what? Until Rayo scored, the fans there, they weren't even whistling. It just seemed like an acceptance. Like, this is what it is now. This is what it is. And they were just really poor. And then Rayo scored a brilliant goal. Alvaro Garcia, a long ball up from Catena, who plays these fantastic balls out from the back. Alvaro Garcia cutting in from the left and finishing with his right foot. A really, really well-worked goal. Rayo are an excellent team. They work hard. We know how they play, and they do it home and away. And they got a well-deserved win. And like I said at the top of the show, November, and Sevilla haven't won at home, and they're in the relegation zone now. They're literally in the relegation zone now. They're in a relegation battle. I think they have to view it like that. We were speaking on our WhatsApp group, and Al said that he feels the World Cup break is going to be very useful for Sampaoli to be able to work with the players and get across certain ideas to them. But they need it, man. They need it. They're in trouble.
They do need it. I suppose the question is, which players can he work with? Because quite a lot of them are going to be at the World Cup.
Yeah, and quite a lot of them, I don't know if they're able to do what he wants. No. Also, speaking of players that can't do what a manager wants, let's talk about Villarreal and Quique Setién. And he's got a very clear idea of what he wants his players to do, and I think there are going to be some players in this Villarreal side who aren't able to do what he wants to do. They lost at Athletic Club 1-0. They actually started really well and played well for the first 25 minutes, but then Athletic absolutely imposed themselves, and in the second half it was chance after chance after chance, and they gave away the ball so many times, Villarreal, when they were trying to play out from the back. Pau Torres, gorgeous Pau, was very, very guilty on
twice. Really bad. Two really bad ones,
but yeah. I think there was a couple of other ones as well. Yeah. I mean, he's going to need some work. He played Isamandi alongside him, Raul Albiol on the bench. Raul Albiol's been the starting centre-back for 3 years for Villarreal, but Quique Setién thinks that maybe he can't play the ball out from the back. It's going to be interesting, but I don't think it's going to be particularly easy for Quique Setién to get his ideas across.
No, I mean, I think he's got a squad that more or less can do some of the things that he wants to do, but I suppose the question mark for me would be, how quickly and how radically does he want to change it? Because I don't think Villarreal were a team that didn't bring the ball out before. They did. You know, and in the same way that you watch Sevilla under Julian Lopetegui, that salida was very well worked. It might not have been as sort of technically pretty, if you like, or as technically risky as what Setién sometimes does, but it was certainly worked. And so I look at Villarreal, and I think in a way they're a squad that could fit Setién. My worry would be if he tries to be too much himself and puts backs up. And for example, you mentioned leaving out Raul Albiol. Personally, I would not have done that. I mean, put very simply, I would not have done that.
Big call. Big call from Quique Setién, who's not afraid to make those big calls. Well done to Athletic, though, for getting the victory and Iñaki Williams scoring. I'm keeping count, by the way. Don't worry, guys. Okay, I know you've all lost count. It's 244 consecutive league appearances for Iñaki Williams. And he scored his fifth league goal of the season. Very nicely taken as well. He had other chances on Saturday. Basically, everybody in the Athletic Club team had chances to score. Because Villarreal were really, really open in that second half. But well done to Athletic. A quick word on the Segunda before we go. Leaders Las Palmas lost 1-0 at Huesca. So Alaves are now level on points with them at the top. They beat Oviedo 2-1. Sid was there and saw Alaves score a 97th minute penalty. I'm sorry.
Didn't really see what it was for and still haven't seen what it was for, but there you go. Well, I don't want to see it, I prefer to be able to pretend we were robbed.
Mm. Burgos are third. They beat Ibiza 2-0 and Eibar are fourth after their 1-0 win at Malaga. Well done to Spain's under-17s, who won the Women's World Cup in India, beating Colombia 1-0 in the final. So congratulations to them. This week, we've got the final round of European matches to look forward to. Tuesday, it's Porto against Atletico. Atletico Madrid have to win this, actually. Yes, they're not even guaranteed Europa League football. They need a better result than Bayer Leverkusen get against Club Bruges to guarantee third spot. So it's an important game for Atleti. We've also got Victoria Pilsen against Barca, which is not an important game. Then on Wednesday, Real Madrid against Celtic. Real Madrid, do they need a win to guarantee top spot? I think a win guarantees top spot.
I've got it into my head that a draw might be enough, but I think you're right. I think a win guarantees.
No, because Leipzig are a point behind them. So if they draw and Leipzig win, then they finish second. So they need to beat Celtic. And Sevilla head to Manchester City. So there we go. And then they've got El Gran Derby next weekend against Real Betis. So it is absolutely
that's
brutal.
Going to be really tasty, isn't it?
Brutal for Sevilla. And then on Thursday, which is what we're really interested in, Real Betis against HJK Helsinki, Real Sociedad against Man United for top spot in that group in the Europa League, and Lech Poznan against Villarreal. Thanks very much for listening, amigos. We'll be back tomorrow for patrons, answering all your questions on the Q&A pod. The bonus pod will be coming up later this week, Thursday or Friday. So come and join us. As we said, it's just €4 a month. We'll be podding all through the World Cup as well. We're keeping it going, talking about what's going on in La Liga and what's going on at the World Cup from a Spanish perspective as well. So make sure you come and join us. You know, you're going to want football content when the World Cup starts. People desperately want football content when the World Cup starts. There isn't enough around. So my suggestion is come and join us now. Get in nice and early and listen to all the archive pods that we have. We'll be back on Monday. If you don't want to be a patron, that's absolutely fine. Mondays, as always. Adios, amigos.
Cheerio.